All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful Saturday, April 24th, 2021. Looking forward to a great show. We're going to be talking with Global Golf Post writer, travel editor, author John Steinbrenner. Soon he'll be calling in, and so I'm looking forward to talking to him. Beautiful morning today, and looking forward to a little shout out to my buddy Woody, who's going to be competing in the Richardson this Thursday, April 29th at Wheatley. So good luck to him. And as you know, he's always a frequent co-host and a big part of this program. So co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop, Woody Lashin, wishing him luck at the Richardson coming this Thursday. I was, you know, looking at this leaderboard at the Zurich Classic, and it's kind of just got me thinking about something I'll have to ask John when he comes on. Lead-up music. What would be your lead-up music? And I was just trying to, in waiting for the show to start, just thinking about what I might have. And I think I'd have to go with something from Bruce Springsteen. So I wonder what you guys listening would be, and girls would be thinking about if you were going to have, you know, you're walking up to Bethpage Black and you're on the first tee and you're making that walk from the putting green where you're sort of anxiously awaiting your tee time, fidgeting with your putting stroke and admiring your wristband that gives you access to Bethpage Black, you know, and if they were going to put on some music, what would you put on? Would it be old school? Would it be hip hop? Would it be something from the 70s? I definitely would probably pick something from the archives of Bruce Springsteen. I think I'd have to, or maybe I was thinking, the only one I was thinking was maybe Teenage Wasteland from The Who. I kind of like the beginning of that song. So, I don't know. It just got me thinking about music and golf. I hope, you know, I'm one of those people who doesn't mind music on the golf course. I like listening to music on the golf course. Some traditionalists don't. I like the tunes flowing when I'm playing, although I could go either way. But given the choice, I would throw on some tunes. I think it's fun. I think it's part of the atmosphere. If, you know, we're not professional golfers, a major part of golf is the companionship and the camaraderie and being with your friends and people that you, for the most part, have chosen to be with if you're not rolling up as a single. But, I think that, so I think music adds to that ambiance and whatever else you might partake in, a beverage, a cigar, whatever it might be. I think music is part of that experience. So, my music might be Bruce, might be The Who, not sure, but, I'm wondering what John would pick, but we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in 90 seconds. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
Founded in the early 1990s, Tri-State Turfgrass Research Foundation exists to improve golf course conditions throughout the Tri-State area, positively impacting millions of golfers each year. The foundation identifies key turfgrass problems, solicits donations, and then works with university professors to solve these problems through integrated pest management. Since its inception, Tri-State has raised $1.1 million for turfgrass research. We would like to thank the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association for their continued support. If you would like to make a donation, visit tristateturf.org. Once again, that's tristateturf.org.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Foschel with Mizuno. There's no better feeling than having your clubs perfectly dialed in, and with over 2,000 authorized performance fitting partners nationwide, it couldn't be any easier to get custom fit using Mizuno's revolutionary Shaft Optimizer 3D. Find the right shaft and match it with any of our legendary grain flow forgings or our award-winning hot metal irons featuring high-strength chromoly. Visit MizunoGolf.com to find the nearest authorized fitter in your area. And remember, nothing feels like a Mizuno.
All right, and we're back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm pleased to be joined by travel editor, author, John Steinbrenner, Global Golf Post. How you doing, John?
Good morning. I'm great.
I was just thinking, I don't know if you heard part of the intro, but I was just curious what, you know, they're playing in Zurich, the Zurich and in New Orleans, and what would be your walk-up music?
Well, I kind of look at it depending upon where I am more
okay.
than anything else. So if I'm in New Orleans, I want to hear a little Dr. John maybe or a little Neville Brothers as I'm walking up. It would be different if I was at Bethpage. I'm thinking Lou Reed, Sweet Jane maybe, or a little Bruce, as you suggest, something New York area. And if I'm you know, in San Francisco or out at the down in Monterey, that's probably some Grateful Dead. So
nice.
I'd sort of have to go with the locale where I am would determine as much what I listen to, because I have so much, there's so much music I love, and I have such eclectic taste in music that it would really all be determined by that, I think.
Yeah, and as you know, as a writer, context matters. So, yeah, I think locale is a big part of that context. Just curious, as a fellow Deadhead, what would be your Grateful Dead song?
Well, you know, I'm a big Eyes of the World guy. I love Box of Rain.
Yes.
Enjoy Bertha a lot. I think Bertha kind of would be, you know, if the Ryder Cup was ever played out in Monterey, that would be the perfect kind of kickoff there. Or, it just sort of varies. I mean, I contributed to this book years ago called The Final Four of Everything, that a bunch of my agent and Richard Sandomir at the Times wrote and put together, or edited actually, and I did a couple of chapters, and one of my chapters was Grateful Dead songs. And what we would do is take 32 entries and then kind of have a face-off and go through to a winner, as you would in the brackets.
Yep.
And so I did that with the Dead, and I had a lot of fun with that. So I've got... I go back a long way with them. I'm 60, almost 65, and saw my first Dead show in 72. And
nice.
There's a lot of their music I like, which is one reason I like them so much, is they were so prolific and wrote so many great, great tunes.
Yeah. My first vinyl album, I'm old enough to have one of those. So my first vinyl album was Europe 72, handed down to me by my cousin. And so, and I've been, no pun intended, forever grateful. I, enjoy their music. Love Box of Rain. I don't think gets enough love. It's one of my favorite. There's a couple of, renditions of it that I really like. And also I might go Samson and Delilah. I like that one too. That's a good one too.
I like that. I like all of those tunes. And I mean, their work is so, so good and so incredible. And, you know, there's nothing like the Dead on a good night. There was nothing like the Dead on a good night. And
yeah,
they were, you know, just great live. And I relish in what I can remember some of those shows. I remember very fondly.
Yes, I agree. I agree on all accounts. And I think some of the most underrated lyrics, too. They have some great, mm-hmm. such great lines, such great, great lines, some great imagery in their lyrics. I love it, you know. Splintered sunlight, things like that, you know, like just such wonderful, you know, one-liners and even chapters or verses, if you will, really good lyrics. And I think sometimes goes underrated.
Couldn't agree more with you.
Well, I'm so glad you got to be on the show, and, wanted to talk a little Long Island golf with you. And as someone who has, traveled the world and I want to get to Long Island, but first I really want to talk about you and when did the journey you know, for writing start, when did the journey for golf start, and when did they intersect?
Yeah, the journey for writing started when I was, you know, in school a million years ago. I just really liked to write, and by the time I got to college, and I had sort of a weird college career, I'd spent 2 years at a university in Switzerland, then I studied at University of Nairobi in Kenya, and eventually made my way out to Oregon, where I finished up. But I think part of the reason I was so attracted to it is, one, I love to read. When you traveled and you lived in places like that and you traveled a lot in and around them, you read a ton. And then just the idea of being able to transport yourself and by writing yourself, transport other people to these places and getting to tell their stories and what the places were like, what the people were like, what the smells and and sites were like, I just really gravitated to it that early on. And it was first for me professionally, basic newspaper job. I had my first newspaper job with the Burlington Free Press in Vermont in 1981. And the night I started working there was the night Bernie Sanders was elected mayor.
Oh, wow.
Burlington. So one of the first people I ever covered in as a journalist was the Bernster. And spent a bunch of time with him up in Burlington, and being a good old guy from Brooklyn, loved to play a little street basketball. I was more of a hockey player, but we shot some hoops sometimes in between interviews. And that was sort of how it got started. And eventually I gravitated a little bit more to sports, started working for Sports Illustrated. And it was there I first wrote about golf a little bit. And then in 99, I took a job with Golf Week magazine to be their senior writer for them. And golf became kind of my full-time occupation, which was fantastic because I'd written for Fortune magazine and for Time, and I'd done a lot of politics, and I was done with that group. And just to get into golf and to write about it, and with its many layers, its many nuances, its many ways of getting into that sport, and the people and the travel and the places and course design and the whole thing. I fell in love with it. And that's kind of what I've been doing since then, with some, odd adventure writing and travel writing outside of golf. But mostly since 99, it's been all golf, and much to my delight.
Now, when did you actually start playing the game? Did you start playing the game as, you said you grew up more of a hockey guy. When did golf enter your life, and was it just because you started writing about it?
No, I mean, I played a little bit. My dad played golf. He was a good athlete. He was not a good golfer, but I kind of grew up around the game, so I was pretty well educated about it, but I really didn't like it that much. I was doing lots of other things. I was training horses when I was in my teens. I was playing, I did a lot of, more, I played football and hockey in school. I skied. I played tennis, in the summertime, and golf just didn't come into the equation. But by the time I got out of college, I'd started to play a little bit and play a little with my dad. So that's gone back when I was 21, 22.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just saying this the other day. I broke 90 for the first time when I was 22, just out of college.
Right.
And that's when I started playing, on a more regular basis. I was able to belong to a club up in Connecticut called Country Club of Fairfield. It was absolutely ridiculously dirt cheap to join. And it's a great old Seth Rayner course right on the water. And so I had a really good place to play that didn't cost me too much money at all. And that made a huge difference. And I was working in New York for Fortune magazine and living out in Connecticut, Fairfield, Connecticut, where I grew up. And, it became kind of a regular way to spend time with my friends on the weekends was to play some golf, and it just kind of blossomed and exploded from there to the point where, it's absolutely my favorite sport. And on a good year, not a COVID year, I'd probably play, 80 to 90 rounds a year in my work.
Beautiful. I'm just so struck by your youth, training horses, tennis, hockey, and then traveling Switzerland, Kenya, Oregon. How does, that's not typical for a Northeasterner for someone to be so, have such a vast, experience at such an early age. How does that happen? What was that like?
Well, my mom was from West Texas, and she grew up on, rancher families out there, pretty hard scrabble, pretty isolated, 40, 50 miles between towns. And so she had a real obsession with learning and reading and education, and also with getting out of, getting out of Dodge and getting out of where the ranch was and being able to, see the world and experience things. And my dad was in publishing, but on the business side of things, and his work took him overseas a bunch. So we sort of grew up in a household that there was a real thirst for education. We had, guests from overseas of my dad's work who would come and stay at the house. And I think early on, I just had a natural curiosity fueled also by the reading I was doing. And when the opportunity came to go to college, the last thing I wanted to do was go to school, in the Northeast somewhere and just sort of be living the same old life. So I was able to, figure out ways to get overseas. I painted houses. You know, I got help from my parents, of course, which was nice. But, you know, I also funded a lot of stuff myself and just was really interested in getting overseas and seeing the world. And once I did, I mean, you know, I just fell in love with it so hard. It was just nothing that was going to stop me from there. I just loved different languages, different places, the experiences of traveling, just the whole shebang, and I just absolutely fell in love with it, and it became a huge part of my life and who I am early on. But all seeds planted by my folks and just being curious from an early age and being really interested in just naturally attracted to different parts of the world, different people, different languages, different places, different foods. I fell in love with it early on, and I've never lost that passion for it.
I mean, given, you know, from what I've heard and, you know, about your childhood, it just seems to be, you were destined to be a travel editor and nothing else. I can't imagine you being anything else, and I'm sure you feel the same. Plus, which falls right in line with Following the Dead, just traveling around. You're just a wandering guy.
Yeah. Well, golf is so great, as you know, for travel too, because I love forest architecture and I love, you know, the simplicity of golf in so many parts of, you know, the British Isles especially, and, you know, the history and the settings and, you know, the pubs afterwards and talking to people and playing with members and just, you know, the game lends itself so well to those sorts of things. Every course is different. Every community is different. And, you know, you're usually, as you are traveling a lot of times, you know, when, you know, I took this train once from Khartoum, Sudan to Aswan, Egypt, and part of it was a boat ride as well. And, you know, everybody on there was, you know, a lot of the people on there, certainly people that could speak any English at all or were European in lineage, were there because we had this common bond of wanting to have an adventure and see the world. So we got on very well. It was really easy to make friends, and I feel golf is that same way. When you play golf and you meet people and you haven't ever known each other, and we're all bonded by the game and our passion for the game. And so it makes traveling under those circumstances even more enriching, because there's no shortage of strangers and no shortage of people to play with, to have a beer with afterwards, and to share the experience with.
Couldn't agree more. So where does Long Island Golf fit into your, when you mentally archive Long Island Golf, what do you archive it under, and how do you describe it?
Well, I mean, it's one of the great golf areas in the entire world. I mean, I adore it. I've been lucky to play a lot of the private clubs out there. I've played in the Travis. I've played in the singles at the National. I mean, I think Garden City and National Golf Links are in my top 10 lists of golf courses in the entire world and golf clubs. I mean, just extraordinary places with great, great golf in Shinnecock, Maidstone, you know, the list goes on and on and on. You know, where McDonald lived, where Rayner was working, when McDonald hired him to be his engineer. You know, really one of the birthplaces of golf in America, you know, I think of Shinnecock being one of the first courses and clubs that opened in this country. And so there's history there. I love the terrain. I love the link-style golf. I love just being out there and being among the game. It's pretty cool. There's nothing quite like it. And like I said, you go to National or Garden City and you really feel like you're stepping back in time, and you can really sense the presence of Walter Travis or a C.B. McDonald or a Rayner and somebody like that when you're there and you're experiencing that, just the design of the holes and how they still play the way they intended them to, how relevant they still are, and the great sense of pride and history the members of those clubs have in trying to maintain these museum pieces and really preserve them and preserve, you know, these places where golf started and took off in America.
Funny you said that. I've written a piece a while back, right before when the Walker Cup was at National, and that's exactly what I did. That was sort of like the title of it. It was basically a walk through a museum, an architectural museum. I love National Golf Links of America. It's one of my favorites on Long Island, if not my favorite. I think it's got a wonderful, not just the architecture, but just the feel of it, the texture of the place, everything about it is just, to me, spot on when it comes to playing golf. Every golf course has its sort of, you know, Shinnecock is obviously steep in history, but that's a different kind of golf course. And not a bad course at all. I mean, I love it, having been fortunate enough to play it. But National to me is, more my style, when it comes to, if you were asking me to pick to be, you know, one or the other, I'd pick, National. I just think it's, not surprisingly, not dissimilar to Garden City as well, but National to me is at the top of the list.
And there's so many other places. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, Garden City Country Club is a revelation. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, St. George's is just unbelievable. I've taken the ferry over and played that, you know, from Bridgeport over to Port Jeff. I mean, that's a fabulous course, and I've played with guys from the Nassau Players Club out at Bethpage, and had that whole experience. And, you know, that's amazing, too. And, again, the history of that, the parks being started, Tillinghast, you know, of course, that first open back in, I believe it was 02, and I was out for that, and I remember that. I mean, that whole, you know, getting there in the morning and guys selling golf equipment out of the trunk of their car, and people getting all psyched up to play. I mean, that's a whole other thing about Long Island golf. It's very cool, but I think that place is great. I love the red course. You know, the black is just brutal, beats you up. But I mean, the whole experience out there is fantastic too. So, you know, and I don't know if Rockaway is considered Long Island, truth be told, but I mean, I love Rockaway, and whenever I fly into Kennedy, it just kind of amazes me, and our approaches as we're banking, I can pick up, you know, three or four courses that I've played and I know and that I love from the air. Inwood, you know, another one there. I mean, Bobby Jones, you know, won a U.S. Open.
Sure.
You know, Engineers, you know, great old historic club, Nassau. Just the whole scene out there is so rich in history and so cool. So I don't know that there's as golf rich and as great an area for the game as in America as Long Island.
No, I agree. I often say it's probably the best, you know, 100-mile stretch. I know people, you know, you got the Gold Coast in Australia, but, you know, I'd put Long Island if you want to, you know, and the Rockaways, we can include that as part of the 100 miles. But I think you have a hard time rivaling. Philly obviously has great golf in the area as well, but it is in terms of a 100-mile stretch, pretty hard to beat Long Island.
Yeah, I agree, and I've written about it a bunch. I actually wrote a piece prior to the U.S. Open at Olympia Fields, where describing Chicago as they don't call it the second city for nothing, and talking about it being pretty good for golf, but not quite up to New York, measuring up to New York. That got elicited a lot of interesting mail from my friends out in the Midwest. But it's hard. It's hard to beat what you have in New York, and then you throw on Westchester, and you know, it's extraordinary. As good as it gets.
How would you describe the different vibe across Long Island, you know, from the Hamptons to the Rockaways?
Well, you know, the Hamptons are interesting. Sometimes, you know, I'd much rather be out there, you know, before or after the season when it doesn't take, you know, an hour and a half to get from Shinnecock to Maidstone when, you know, it's a little bit more sleepy old place as opposed to, you know, this sort of happening scene with oodles of money and lots of people and just kind of crowded and busy and all that. So I'm not as enamored of the vibe in the Hamptons in, you know, July and August as I am in October, let's say. You know, Garden City is such a little enclave and even Garden City Country Club too, just down the road there. So, you know, that seems to me have a much more relaxed vibe. And again, especially Garden City golf, you know, just much more all about golf and sort of no nonsense. And I enjoy that. I really like kind of being that. And then Bethpage is just people who are nuts about the game and love it and love the experience and love the opportunity to play a U.S. Open or PGA championship golf course and just love the community of that parking lot, of golf course, and the whole thing. So, I mean, the vibe changes a lot, but one thing that stands out kind of no matter where you are is the passion. I mean, I have a lot of friends who are members at National and Maidstone and Shinnecock, and they're, you know, and these guys love the game of golf, and that's the common denominator, which I think is so cool out there, is just there's an overriding passion for the game of golf and an appreciation, I think, for the place that Long Island has in the history of golf in America. And I really get that sense. I mean, people really, really like it, whether I'm playing with a retired police detective and, you know, a couple of, you know, plumbers or construction guys at Beth Page, whether I'm playing with, you know, CEOs of, you know, hedge fund companies at Shinnecock. I mean, they're all united by that same thing of recognizing, appreciating, and loving the great history, the great quality of golf in Long Island. And it's very cool. So I like that overall vibe. I just feel like I'm in a place that golf is celebrated, and I like those places.
You once wrote a piece about a little bit of mentioning, talking a little bit about the Richardson and how before COVID and before some changes in the schedule, when the Richardson was really sort of the launch for Long Island golf, amateur golf and the tournament season. I actually was with Woody last couple weeks ago, and I called the Richardson the Masters of Long Island Golf, because it was sort of like, and he nearly laughed me out of the studio. But I do think there was a, you know, at one point, and I remember you poignantly pointing this out, that the Richardson in its history too just sort of was like this opening day for the competition on Long Island. Do you remember that piece?
Yeah, I do remember it, and, you know, one of our awards, the Golf Writers Association of America, is named after Mr. Richardson, former New York Times editor and writer. And, yeah, I mean, I think it was, you know, it's amazing, and I didn't bring this up, and I should have, but you've got the Richardson, you've got, you know, the Travis, of course, you've got the singles with the National, which, you know, Walter Travis, you know, they started the Travis years ago, and the singles was started by McDonald himself. So you've got some really, really great old, and some of the oldest and most prominent amateur invitationals out in Long Island as well.
Yep.
And I think that's a really cool thing when you think about it, and how important good competitive golf is and was to that part of the world, as well as just recreational golf for, you know, club members and for people who could play at the different, you know, public facilities. I think that's great. And the Richardson, like you say, you had the Richardson, you had the, yeah, the Travis. I'm trying to think of the tournament now. I'm losing it in terms of the over at Engineers had a tournament. But you really had in the beginning of the year when the weather was tough. I mean, they joked about it being Travis weather in mid-May. You know,
right.
It could be 75 degrees or it could be 45 and raining sideways. That it was a way that really got the golf season going. And for a lot of those courses, it was actually kind of appropriate and fun playing them in such difficult conditions, because like Garden City, it's sort of a link style, inland link style course that you can play the ball on the ground, and it was meant to be sort of played that way. So yeah, that's a great part of the history there. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it really is the thing that makes Long Island golf so cool to me.
Yeah. John, we're just about out of time, and can't thank you enough for joining us today, and I hope we can continue this conversation when you come back on.
Anytime. I'd always enjoy doing this, and it's great talking golf and great talking golf with you. And we'll just have to sort out my walk-on music when we come on, depending upon where we are and what we're doing. But I had a good time this morning. Thanks so much for having me.
I appreciate it. Take care, John.
All right. All the best. Cheers.
You too. All right. That was John Steinbrenner, the golf travel editor, author, and also part of, you know, from the Global Golf Post. So thank you for joining me. Thank you to my man behind the glass, Trevor. And be well. We'll see you next week. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsese.